This is Remarkable. Welcome to Remarkable, a marketing podcast for podcasters who aren't marketers. I'm your host and teacher, Dave Mooring, and I want to know what it takes to stand out, get noticed, and build a committed audience of listeners and fans. I'm on a quest to find out what makes a podcast remarkable, and I invite you to join me each week as I interview other podcasters, experts, and marketers. The Remarkable Podcast is part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. If you'd like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. This is episode number 12. In this episode of Remarkable, I feature me, your host and teacher. That's right, I decided that maybe it's time you learn a little bit more about your host and the why behind the Remarkable Podcast. So I invited my buddy Jay, who I interviewed in episode 8, to interview me. A little flip mode, if you will. You'll learn about my background and how I got into podcasting in the first place, and I share what kept me from launching the show sooner, how I decided to podcast about podcasting, and where the name came from. I hope you enjoy it. I'll keep this short, so without further ado, here's me.
David Mooring, welcome to Remarkable.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Well, it's your show, but this has been a fun treat for me to get to guest host a show that I've been listening to since the beginning, actually.
Yeah. So thanks for having me on my show.
Absolutely. Yes. Glad we could work this out. So thanks for your time. I'm a big fan of you and your work. I'm really looking forward to talking with you.
I appreciate it. Same here.
So let's just jump right in. Obviously, you've been, you know, this is, what episode is this for you now?
This will be number 12.
Number 12.
Yeah.
All right. And for people who don't know you, usually you're on the other side of this, so you're always asking for other people's stories. So if you don't mind, can you give us just a little insight into your background and what you're doing day to day these days?
Yeah. So I guess typically the way I describe myself is I'm a creative who has found himself in the business world. So I grew up as an artist, doing photography and drawing, and I've always kind of been a right brain thinker, but I've always had a knack for business and interest in entrepreneurial activity. So after going to Carolina, went to UNC Chapel Hill, where I studied Latin America studies and some business courses, and had, you know, several different jobs coming out of that, and ended up going back to school to get my master's degree in business. And that's relevant because after that, in 2005, I spent 5 years working at a web development company in Durham, where I really got into the interwebs and the technology side of in marketing,
sure.
Which was a really good fit for me as someone who did have a creative side. I love solving problems, and I got a really good sense for what was going on in the web world. So I was there from 2005 to 2010. We worked on a lot of really cool projects. We grew from, I think when I joined Don, the owner, I think we had around 9 or 10 people. And in 3 years, we were able to grow up to about 24 people. And we had one of the first apps in the App Store when iTunes released the App Store, I think with the second generation.
Very nice.
iPhone. Yeah, that was a game called Lumina. And I think you can still find it. It was basically a knockoff of the Simon game from the 80s.
Yeah. No, it was a completely original
idea. Yes, that's right. It was totally original. That was a really great experience. And, you know, Don had the foresight of getting in early on that. Mm-hmm. And so he was a huge fan of Steve Jobs and Apple, I think, his entire life. So he was always trying to lead the charge on doing some new and innovative things. And that really got us a foot in the door for our team built the first city search app, and we did some work for NBC Universal for the Sci-Fi Channel. Right. Their first, they have an app called Blaster, which is basically everything science fiction. We built the first version of that. So just a lot of cool projects that we worked on, and was able to, with that team, kind of learn what it means to to do some things out of the box thinking and kind of push the envelope and move forward. In 2010, with the economy shrinking, our team shrunk as well. And so I had an opportunity to go out on my own. Essentially, I was working as a vice president there. And as the team shrank, we didn't really need a whole vice president. Sure. Right. So it actually worked out well. So I started a company called Burlap Sky. And my intention was to build a digital marketing agency. But over the years, I realized that I'm really more interested in consulting and teaching and coaching other people. Mm-hmm. That's what I've been doing for 5 years. And in the past couple of years, I've just been a big fan of podcasting. And I got into it by way of listening to audiobooks and then stumbled across podcasts. So I've kind of been in the digital world now. I guess it's going on 11 years.
Wow.
And
seen a lot.
I have. It's been up and down. In about 10 of those years, I've been teaching in the evening courses and spoken at some conferences and things like that. That's really what I'm passionate about is learning what's working in digital marketing and helping other small business owners and entrepreneurs and artists to figure out what they're doing. So that's really what I've been focused on for the past 5 years now.
So that's something I find very interesting. So you at Crosscom, you work with some of the biggest names, right? Like, I mean, NBC, Universal, it's hard to get bigger than that. But you seem to focus now more on, you know, the small business, the entrepreneur, that sort of thing. So why do you think you've gravitated that direction rather than, you know, obviously you could be doing this for, big New York corporations if you wanted to. So what do you think draws you to that small business world?
Yeah, that's a great question. And at Crosscom, we had a variety of clients. So we did work with some small businesses and some larger clients. What I realized is that I think you have a lot more impact with smaller businesses. And as an entrepreneur myself, I really pull for the little guy. I believe that we can all impact our communities and our families and our world. Yeah. And the best way to do that is to take whatever we're gifted with, whatever talents that, you know, not all talents are innate. You know, I'm not saying everybody's born being an expert, but I think there's just some things that we lean towards doing. So for you, that might be writing. For someone else, that might be drawing. I've been really interested lately in hand lettering. And so just following some of the people on Instagram who are doing that and making a living doing hand lettering. And you know, it's a really small niche, but you know, they're really passionate about it, really good at it. And there's people that want that. So I like helping people that have a passion and a gifting grow that into a business so they can do what they were, you know, kind of do what you were born to do. Mm-hmm. And make money and make a living doing that.
That's really great. I wish more people had that sort of, perspective on things that were kind of willing to help lift others up. That's awesome.
Well, it's certainly not easy. For me and not for them.
Right, right. But it's noble. It's certainly noble.
I appreciate that.
You know, kudos to you for that. So of course I've known you for a long time. I don't know if I'm allowed to say how long I've known you.
This is the get to know me episode.
Over 20 years now, right?
Years,
something like that. But it's pretty much as far back as I can remember. I think you've always had, you know, you've always been the kind of guy to have ideas, to sit around and be like, you know what? I wonder why things are this way, or somebody should do X or Y. But, at what point do you think you realized that you weren't just someone with ideas, but that you were actually an entrepreneur, that you were somebody who could go out and take action and make change?
Well, that's a great question, Jay. Now, I think I realized at some point in the probably towards the end of my time at Crosscom, I think I realized I started really following some people that were doing some really cool stuff online. And making the name for themselves and building a brand. And it started to click to me that I could do that too, or why not me, or why not you, you know?
Sure.
So I think I realized that, you know, I think we all have this misconception, and this is really hard, especially even after going to business school, to break through, is that you perceive a business as following a set of rules, mm-hmm. and that you have to play by these rules and you have to do things a certain way. And I think there's a lot of fear caught up in that. So a lot of people are scared to do something that's different or something that kind of goes against the grain.
Right.
And I think I realized that the businesses that are really making some unique changes and are really doing some cool stuff are the businesses that have kind of flipped things on their head. And as someone, as you've mentioned that, you know, I like to come around, I like to sit around and think of ideas and figure out why is it not working. And I, after working with so many businesses that just can't seem to get it right, even if they got a new website and a new app, they still wouldn't grow and they still wouldn't make that change or they still wouldn't break through. And I think it's because they just didn't, they were trying to put, you know, they were trying to put a bandage on something that was never a really great idea anyway. So as I internalized that, I guess I realized that, well, if nobody else is going to do it, maybe I can be that one to do it. Mm-hmm. So I think, and even then, like I mentioned, when I started Burlap Sky, I thought that I would build a digital marketing agency just because I thought that's what needed to happen. It's like, right. Yeah, I was coming out of an agency. I'm used to working with other people. I have a lot of friends in the agency world. So I thought, well, I'll start an agency.
Right.
And I've still struggled to find where is my footing, and I think I'm starting to get that now, but for the longest time I was trying to figure out how to do my own thing but also do what's expected of me.
Right. Yeah, so it's funny because as you were talking about that, I remember your umbrella design, you know, your talking about, I don't know if you want to talk about that too much, but for your audience, you know, you've had a different take on what an umbrella should do and how it should be designed. You know, I remember talking with you about that and how we all kind of have just come to accept that, yeah, you know, the lower half of our pants are going to get wet when we use an umbrella because that's, you know, that's the best we can do. but I think that you've kind of always had, you know, you've had good perception about things that most people have just come to accept, and you've had courage to say, well, it doesn't have to be that way. And I think that's part of what has been impressive about you is that you've had the courage to step out and do things that no one else is doing. So I'm curious if you know where that comes from. Do you have some, was there something in you that gave you the courage to say you can do things your way, or what do you think about that?
That's another great question, Jay, but in the umbrella thing, I will go back to that.
Yeah.
Cause it's really a kind of a pivotal moment, or I guess is one of several bricks that led to the whole structure. But yeah, I was again working at Crosscom, and we parked in the back of this building. And so there was a small parking lot where we parked, and then you had to walk, you know, a block or so, a city block is downtown Durham, to get into the building. And I've got my lunchbox and my bag where I'm carrying my laptop, and you're fiddling with this umbrella. And it's like, if you're holding a round umbrella, you know, half the umbrella is not doing anything,
right?
Because it's sticking out in front of you, you know, yeah. and the other half is really not big enough to cover all of the back of you.
Right.
So, and then the wind's blowing. So you've kind of got the rain anyway. So I wondered at some point, and we had this conversation, why nobody had ever built an oval umbrella or an umbrella that was somewhat lopsided. And then I thought, well, that's a silly idea. Surely if that was possible, then somebody would have done that already.
Right.
But, you know, it must have been a silly idea that I had because I'm not an engineer. And then a couple of years later, I was looking through, I was doing some work at another firm as a contractor and saw one of their design magazines and flipped through it. And in the previous year, somebody had won an award for developing an umbrella that wasn't round.
Yep.
And so I was like, oh no, that really was a good idea. No, somebody won an award for that. So,
yeah.
So why do I think that, or why do I push the boundaries, or I think that that's okay? I think it's just the way my brain is wired. I can think over and over of times where I wish there was a piece of furniture that I had that just doesn't exist and I've not been able to find it. Yeah. So I guess it's just the creative side of me and problem solving. I think, well, this doesn't work. I wish I had something that's not existent, and I try to find it and it's just not there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of curious if there was like a moment when you realized, you know, in your childhood or something, you had some moment where you realized that, you thought differently and it was okay, or if that's just sort of always been part of who you are.
No,
is there an origin story there?
No, I think it's just been part of who I am. But I think the thing that's been difficult is that, you know, I grew up in a small town, and sure, I mean, I hung around some people that were much smarter than I am. One of my best friends growing up, but I don't think it's you're rarely taught that it's okay to think differently. Mm-hmm. So I never felt much validation. I thought my ideas were silly. And I actually recall coming home and telling my brother and my dad things that I'd learned in science class and them thinking it was silly or funny or just kind of, you know,
sure, in
lovingly poking at me that, yeah, David comes home with his silly ideas and his silly science projects and things like that. So I guess I just never thought that it was valid until in my adult life when I've had ideas that I've seen, I've been able, I'm old enough now that I can know that, okay, I had this idea for the umbrella and I, 3 years later, I saw an umbrella win an award and that's validating. And I've had, like I said, that's just one of many instances where I've seen an idea that I had that probably would have been silly had I not seen it validated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find that interesting because I think, you know, obviously humans are such social creatures. We learn most of what we learn by watching what other people are doing. So there's this natural inclination to just go with the flow anyway. And then for those of us who kind of start out by meandering and, you know, wandering from that path, there are many sort of mechanisms in place, whether it's parents or peers or, you know, family or whatever, that sort of will try to beat that out of you to make you get into line.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's impressive that, you know, you are where you are in life and you still have the courage to go out there and ask the questions and take action and design the umbrella, you know? So
I wish I had a design the umbrella. I think you can buy them on Amazon now.
Probably. Yeah. And if not, I'm sure somebody's out there kickstarting one, you know, right now. But that can be your gift to the world, right?
That's right.
It's a free one.
That's right.
So you want to go back to something else you said. So you talked about at Crosscom how you had this opportunity to sort of get in early with the iPhone and with iTunes. So we'll get to the how and why in a moment, but I have a little inside scoop that probably most of your listeners don't know about you, which, again, this falls in line with what we were just talking about. But I remember you identifying podcasting as the next big thing. Probably, I don't know, a year and a half, maybe 2 years before it really popped up on the radar of most other people. So you knew that it was coming and you knew that it was a good idea before practically anybody else, you know, was talking about it. So I'm curious if you, looking back on it, can see what you recognized that other people didn't. Do you know what those cues were that you picked up on that told you that podcasting was going to be a big thing?
Yeah. And I have to relate it to another story of something else that I've actually written about, but I think I recognize some trends because I saw that the WordPress marketplace for themes, mm-hmm. Was growing. And so I would think around the, you know, 2007, 2008, I was intimately familiar with WordPress. And I don't think there were a whole lot of.
Can you give people who aren't familiar with that a little brief on what WordPress is and themes?
Yeah, yeah. So for those of you listening that don't have anything to do with your website, or you don't have a website, or you've never hosted or built a website, WordPress is essentially a platform, an engine for running your website. And I think I haven't seen the recent numbers, but maybe one in every four websites in the world now is built using WordPress. It's one of the founders was Matt Mullenweg, a company called Automatic. But they have a hosted platform where you can pay a monthly fee to use. And then there's a free open source platform where you can actually download and create your WordPress. So most websites, for all intents and purposes, are built on WordPress. But it started off as a blogging platform. And so we had, being in the web development world back in the 2006, 2007, 2008, somewhere in there, people were taking the blogging platform and manipulating it to work more as a website because it was a fairly inexpensive way to get a website up and running, and you could still put custom designs on it. But over time, they turned the blogging platform more into a full website platform where you could host website with pages and all your contact forms and all the different things like that. And at some point, it occurred to us, we would have a lot of clients come to us that were looking for low cost websites and they couldn't afford, you know, $5,000-$10,000 for a custom, website. Sure. And so some of the guys and I would bat around the ideas of what if you could build a theme, and we didn't call them themes, but a design for a large organization like Habitat for Humanity. and maybe you could sell it to the head organization, and then they could license it out to all the smaller, you know, local chapters or branches and just modify it a little bit. And so that really led us to what if you could build a theme for churches, and what if you could build a theme for nonprofits, and what if you could build a theme for dentist offices? And so we had this idea, and we batted it around, but we didn't have the resources, and we were, you know, really moving into the iPhone app territory. So
sure.
I wish that we had done more with that, but we didn't. And I always wondered if it was a good idea. And then, you know, again, a year or two later, you had elegant themes popping up, and Woo Themes and Studio Press and Thesis. So all these platforms were, and then eventually ThemeForest popped up, which is now one of the biggest sellers of WordPress themes, and it's a multi-million dollar business. Mm-hmm. So I think going through that gave me some clues into how momentum shifts in the digital world. Mm-hmm. And I've started to recognize when certain companies or when certain brands or when certain people start getting into something, then it's starting to get big. Mm-hmm. So one of the people that I was following was Tim Ferriss, the author of The 4-Hour Work Week and The 4-Hour Body, The 4-Hour Chef. I found his book in digital audio format. And so I'd been keeping up with him. And then I'd also have been a big fan of Copyblogger, which is now Rainmaker. And I've interviewed, you know, Jared Morris, the VP of marketing for their digital platform. I'd been following them since around 2007, 2008. So I'd been keeping up with people like that. And then I guess it's been about 2 years now, they started getting into podcasting, and then it started popping up. I would see news articles, and this was before Serial, but I would see things. Right. I'd been listening to podcasts for a while, and I just saw more and more people talking about it, and more and more people getting into it. And then Apple's, was it CarPlay or Apple Play? Speculation that would be in cars and available with the podcasting app built in. And then I got word that Chevy and Ford, at, you know, at some point, are going to have an in-dash podcast player. So,
yep.
I think just keeping up with those trends. And when you've got someone like Tim Ferriss that jumps on board, and then you've got Copyblogger, Rainmaker launching with, you know, they maybe had 10 shows all at once.
Right, sure.
I mean, that's a big investment,
right,
into moving forward. Yeah. So
maybe I have the timeline out of order, but I think I feel like you had called it before you even saw those people on there. I remember talking about it with you.
I knew, I knew it was coming before then. I guess it's when they got on board that I was like, everybody's got to get in, catch the wave now.
Right.
Like, I mean, I saw it building before then, but definitely when those two launched, or I knew that they were going to, I knew that that was kind of the icing on the cake, that it's time.
Yeah. And so this is connected to that. And if you don't want to talk about it, we don't have to, but I'm curious. So you had a couple of examples previously, you know, with like the umbrella design or the WordPress themes, right? And you saw this wave coming with podcasting, but you didn't jump on it immediately when you saw it, right? You kind of waited, you still waited a little bit longer before you really dove into it. So I'm curious if there was something that kept you from sort of diving into it as soon as you recognized it. What were the factors there that decided, kind of helped you decide your timing on this?
Yeah, really it was just a matter, I think at the beginning it was mostly time. Mm-hmm. So let's see, I decided to create a podcast in the fall of 2014. Mm-hmm. That's when I knew that I was going to have a podcast. So I think sometime around December that year is when I launched my overall teaching online brand, Super Simple, sometime around then. And I went ahead and ordered a microphone and a stand and, you know, a couple of pieces of equipment to start the podcast. And I think you and I even have a test run from sometime around early 2015, where let's see if we can get Skype call recorder to work and that type of stuff.
Which no one will ever hear, ever.
Maybe not. So it's been a while coming. Yep. So initially I just didn't have the time or resources. I didn't know exactly what I was going to do.
Sure.
Sometime towards the summer, I started doing some recordings, and I thought I was going to do more of a general marketing podcast. And then I ended up going to the Podcast Movement Conference, which is really where I met a lot of people that helped me get off the ground. Mm. And I ran into Glenn the Geek, who I've interviewed, and suggested that I narrow down and start with a smaller niche instead of just... Originally, I was going to do solopreneurs and entrepreneurs in marketing, a topic for, you know, the marketing, how they would go about marketing and building their brand and their audience. And at the conference, I decided to niche down and just focus on people who are using podcasting either as their main outlet or as a marketing tool for their business or their art form or what have you. And then from there, it just, I think a lot of it was fear. I was scared of releasing something, and having my voice heard and being critiqued. And, in some regards, it was good. I'm happy that I decided to do a podcast about podcasting or marketing for podcasters, but I think it actually slowed me down because knowing that the podcasting greats may listen to my show, the people right. that have been doing sure. it for 10 years. Yeah. Right. And I'm not the podcasting expert. I was hesitant to release something and be thought, wow, he's saying that he's, you know, talking about this topic, but he doesn't know anything about it. So,
sure, yeah.
And I think that's where my intro is, you know, I'm on this journey to find out what makes a podcast remarkable. I know marketing is my expertise, but podcasting is not. So I'm trying to merge those two worlds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to, I'm not saying that I'm the podcasting expert. So right. It's made a little bit more comfortable, but yeah. So the first part, it was time in the last 6 months before our launch was really just fear.
Yeah, well, no, that's why I asked, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are going through that same process, and they have an idea, but there's still a lot of resistance. And so I think it's good for people to hear that you know, even people like the great Dave Mooring have these issues. You know, so, and I want to say, I mean, I appreciate you, staying humble with everything. But if you go back and listen to your very first episode, right out of the gate, you are producing very, very high quality, work. So I think people would be surprised to know that you were fearful of putting that out there, just because the quality is so high, and, you're doing a great job already.
So. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks a lot. And I'm going to have to give a little bit of a shout out to, Julio Gonzalez, who's, I mentioned him. I've got a little spot for him because he helped me create the music, and he's done some of the editing. But even after I'd recorded and edited the first couple of shows, I couldn't get the sound and the audio quality where I wanted it. Mm-hmm. And so I reached out to him, and he's been a huge help. So I may still not have launched if it wasn't for having sure. him right. putting the final touches. So I've yeah. got and he's, you know, again, there'll be a spot for him so you can listen, but he's been a huge help for that. And then, you know, you've encouraged me over and over just to ship it, you know,
sure. yeah,
just
right.
to, you
yeah.
can't learn from it if you don't get it out there. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I think you've touched on most of this, but sort of, can you walk us through a little bit of how and why you decided podcasting was the right thing for what you want to do? And I want to get to super simple here in a minute, but maybe you can go ahead and connect those two for us.
Yeah. So, you know, I built a large network I'm in the Triangle region of North Carolina, and I've just in my gut, I've known that I've needed to go larger, and I've just needed to think bigger on a national scale to kind of get where I want to go and reach the numbers of people that I really want to help. So over the past couple of years, as I mentioned, around 2014, I started taking some of the courses and material that I've been teaching and putting them online to help other entrepreneurs who I couldn't reach through an in-person seminar or workshop. And that's where Super Simple came about. It's just that's, you know, where I try to reach more people, and I try to do a good job of teaching entrepreneurs and solopreneurs really what it is they need to know to market their business, and what they should ignore, and what are the simple techniques they can use. And there's just so much that we can get overwhelmed with. The purpose of the podcast really was for me to understand podcasting the same way that maybe Darren Rouse, a pro blogger, understands blogging. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I believe he probably got into blogging earlier than I'm getting into podcasting. But when you have something like the medium of podcasting that's getting really big, and I think we're still in the early stages, you need people that understand the medium to teach other people how to do it well, and how to, you know, if they want to make money from it or if they want to grow an audience, how to do that. So my intention of getting into podcasting was because I really wish that I had gotten into blogging earlier. Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity, and I'd started a blog back in 2004, 2005, I think. So I was aware of blogging. I just didn't stick with it long enough to become someone who would be trusted with helping other people.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I see podcasting as just another form of blogging for a lot of people. So I know there's lots of different forms of podcasting, and I'm not talking necessarily about the people that are doing the high quality serial type shows that are taking, you know, a team of 5-10 people, sure, 6 months to produce. I'm more talking about using it as a blog to produce content to build your business and your audience. So I'm trying to learn it so that I can teach the next generation or the next wave of business owners that want to use it as a way to market their business.
Mm-hmm. Was there sort of a moment that you had the, you know, sort of the light bulb moment or eureka moment for you, where you realized you could sort of marry your expertise in marketing and digital marketing with this sort of emerging, you know, wave of podcasting? Did you have a sort of an aha moment there?
Yeah, I actually did. And it was at the Podcast Movement Conference in Fort Worth last July. Because again, I mentioned when I went to the conference, I was going to try to learn more about podcasting so I could launch my show and start networking with people on a national level. But I met a dozen people or 15 people or more that either had just started a podcast or were interested in podcasting about topics unrelated to business or marketing. And they had no idea how to market their shows or how to grow their shows. Mm-hmm. And so we would have lunch or I would, you know, grab a drink with them after some of the events or talk to them at some of the networking things. And all these when I'd let them know what I was doing, all these questions would pop up,
sure, mm-hmm,
about marketing. And so I'd realize that's where I realized that there's a need, because even that they're at a conference to learn about podcasting, but what they really need to learn is how to market and how to find their voice and their audience and build that. So that was my aha moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, because again, having known you for so long, you know, you've always been very generous, and you've always been the kind of guy who's looking to help other people succeed. I think that's just, you know, part of your nature. So I find it interesting that, you know, that it seems to fit with you very well, that you would go to a place looking to learn something and you would realize that there are all these amazing people that you've already been looking up to and that you had a way to help them. And so that's sort of all loops together, you know, for the impetus of your, for your podcast. I think that's really cool.
Thanks. And that really sums it up. I mean, that's just, I saw a need that, yeah, I could meet.
Right.
And I'm
like,
hoping,
finally, yeah, these are my people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm hoping I can meet that need.
Yeah. You seem doing a great job so far. So
I appreciate it.
And you know, one thing about, I think, Remarkable, it's such a great name, for your podcast, and, really, it kind of captures the essence of what you're doing and what you're trying to help other people do with their own brands and everything. So is there a story behind the name of Remarkable? Could you tell us how you came up with that?
Yeah. And I'm actually going to have to give, you know, a shout out to Seth Godin, who I intend to have on the show at some point.
Right.
But it all goes back to when I started teaching classes to small business owners about marketing. So I'd say sometime around 2007 or 2008, I started teaching. I've got a regular gig, I guess, at Durham Technical Community College in Durham, where I teach anywhere from 2 to 3 evening classes that are 2 or 3 hours. They're just one-off seminars open to the public. I teach 2 or 3 every semester over there, just about. And as I've been preparing my materials for those, at some point you know, being a big fan of Seth Godin and reading a lot of his, I realized that one of the biggest problems that most small businesses have is just that they don't have anything that's remarkable about their business. They're just another Me Too company. Mm-hmm. And so it makes marketing very difficult. But if you can build a company or a brand or a product that really does stand out and is really worth remarking about or worth talking about, mm-hmm, and a lot of this comes from Seth Godin, that if you build something that's remarkable, then it's easy to market it. It's easy to tell people about, sure, it, because people want to talk about it. And my favorite example is this little barbecue restaurant in Greenville, North Carolina called Bee's Barbecue, where they're not they don't have a website. They don't have an email address. They're not on Yelp, Foursquare, or Facebook. They do not have a web presence. They don't take credit cards. I mean, it's like they're so
Shouldn't work, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like if you want to see anything that doesn't work, it doesn't work. They have picnic tables, limited menu, and when they sell out of food, they close. So you don't even know. You could show up at 4:30 and they're done because they sold out. I mean, but they always sell out every single day because they have a remarkable product. What they're providing to the community is so high quality that they don't have to do marketing. So if they did marketing, it would just be to grow or open up a franchise or expand. Right. And that's what I tell small business owners, is that if you have something that people will make a line out of your door to get to without you having to tell them about, then marketing and advertising is easy. Right. So when I decided to launch the podcast, I'm looking for that. Because if you take an average show and somebody's trying to build their audience and it's just not very good, the product sound quality is not good, the topic's not engaging, nobody wants to hear about it, then you really, marketing is going to be just pain. It's going to be painful. Sure. But if you can find a remarkable podcast, what makes a podcast remarkable, whether it's comedy or sports or what have you, if it's really engaging and people will, if 10 people will tell 10 more people and you have 100 people and they'll tell 10 more people and you have 1,000, then it's easy to build an audience. So I don't know yet what makes podcasts stand out and remarkable. I know typically what makes a business remarkable.
Sure.
So that's really where the name came from, is I'm trying to figure out, why do some podcasts blow up and make it big and build, and not even necessarily big as far as numbers, but you know, some people build a really loyal audience and they've been doing it for 5 or 10 years and they just have this dedicated audience and it's able to pay for their lifestyle or what they're doing.
I know you've made occasional mention of, you know, if people are not talking about you offline, then no one's going to be talking about you online either. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I've always appreciated that. Something's kind of stuck with me. So, if you don't mind, so if you could talk a little bit more about your sort of parent, you know, your umbrella over Remarkable is Super Simple. Can you tell us a little bit about what Super Simple is and how Remarkable fits in with that?
Yeah. So again, after I'd been teaching these courses, I just realized that I have, you know, maybe 20 different topics that I've taught, from email marketing to content marketing to branding to website strategy. And I just needed an outlet, a place to start putting that content. Mm-hmm. And one of the phrases that I just kept using over and over as I would tell a small business owner is, what is the most super simple thing you can do to accomplish your goal? So you might not even need to be on Facebook or Twitter. You know, maybe you just need to call your last 10 customers and see if they'll buy from you again. And that's really simple, right? And everybody's like, oh, wow, I hadn't even thought about that. That is really simple. And so I think a lot of marketers overcomplicate things, and my goal is to make them super simple. So that's where the name came from. And so again, I intended to have a podcast and I'm building a network. So I intend to add future shows to the network. So Remarkable is just one of my extensions of under that umbrella. So I've got a couple of, you know, some blog posts that I've put up, and I've got actually a free mini course that I'm going to be launching, and I've got a paid Super Simple University as a paid membership for an annual enrollment into a lot of that marketing content that I've put together and I've been teaching over the years. So Remarkable is just one of the shows under my, I guess it's under my marketing tab. So
sure.
Is a way to reach an audience and to build my brand. And again, that's specifically for podcasters and solopreneurs or artists that are trying to build their own audience.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, I've seen a lot of your work all over the place, but I think the neat thing about Remarkable is it fits in very well with Super Simple, but again, it's contributing back to the community that it serves already, right? Because you're drawing in these people that, you know, podcasters might not be aware of, but all of them have had great insight. You know, I've listened to every one of your episodes.
You're the one.
I'm the one, yeah. But, you know, I get something out of everybody you talk to, whether they're somebody I had heard of or somebody I've never heard of, but they've all had great insight into podcasting, and they all seem to be doing excellent things, you know, in different areas. So it's been really great, I think, to see. Again, already you're contributing back really, really strongly to the community that you're serving. So it's pretty cool.
Thank you.
And I want to be respectful of your time, as always, since you're always, as you always say, you're always respectful of your guest time. But is there anything that you know, after people listen to this first interview with you, is there anything you'd like to have people do, some action you'd like them to take, or a place you'd like them to come look for you, or anything?
Yeah, I would love to hear from people. So I haven't actually heard from anybody that's listening to the show. I know the people that I know that listen to the show, but for the, as far as the people that picked it up, whether they found it on New and Noteworthy or they heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend, starting to sing 80s lyrics. Right. I would love to hear from them. So I would love an email at dave@supersimple.com and the last E off of simple, cause it wasn't available. So supersimple.com. And I also don't think I could trademark that as well. But yeah, I would love to get an email from somebody, that's listening just to say, you know, I have a question or give me some feedback. Tell me what you like or don't like, or just to say, hey, I would love to hear from somebody. And then anybody else and actually haven't mentioned this in a previous episode, but as an add-on benefit or something that I've been trying to do to give back to the community. When I came back from the Podcast Movement Conference last July, I started a Facebook group called Podcast Marketing. Mm-hmm. And I think we're getting close to 100 people in that group. And it's just a group of other podcasters who I'm trying to corral and cajole into giving us feedback and input and building a community of people that are looking specifically for the marketing and audience building aspect of podcasting. There's a lot of great groups. I'm not trying to take away from anybody that's talking equipment and process and all that, but I'm trying to build a community of people that are interested in learning about how to do the marketing aspect and audience building. So you can just search Facebook groups for podcast marketing, and it should show up. But I invite anybody that's listening, whether you have a podcast yet or not, just to request to join that group, and I'll add you to the group.
Sounds great. So just so that's clear, that's dave@supersimple.com, and supersimple is SUPERSIMPL. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you're going to put all this in the show notes, I'm sure.
They will be, yes. Katie is a huge help to me, and she helps with the Katie helps me with the notes, so she will add those to the show notes so that they are there.
Yes, you
will
many find thanks them. To Katie. She keeps everything running smoothly over there.
Yes, because I am not detail oriented.
So yeah, I also want to put a plug in for Super Simple. If you don't mind me tagging onto your stuff here, Dave, a little bit,
please.
As an author, and somebody who has never really gotten too deep into the business side of things, I've gotten a lot of great little tips that have really been helpful for me in helping sort of do some self-promotion for books and things like that. So there's a lot of great information there. And true to Dave's word, it is super simple stuff. It's just when you're out there on the internet looking for marketing advice, there's a lot of stuff that seems really overwhelming, and Dave has really done a great job of breaking that stuff down into, you know, sort of the three basic steps that even I can do and see good effect. So appreciate that. And I think anybody out there can get some great information there.
Thanks, Jay.
I'll check it out.
Man. Yeah. Thank you. Much appreciated. Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, any final words, any closing thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
No, I would just say, over if you're struggling with growing your show or getting something started, just don't do what I did and wait around because of fear. It's not that bad. Just just get out there and do it. And so, Jay, I really appreciate you taking time to interview me.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for letting me hijack your show here and get to talk to you a little bit. So it's always great to hear your story. I know you don't get to do this very much, so I appreciate you sharing that stuff with us.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Remarkable, part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. I appreciate you taking time to listen, and I hope you learned something about me and the Remarkable Podcast. You can find my notes from this interview, relevant links, and a full transcript at supersimple.com/Dave. That's SUPERSIMPL.com/DAVE. As I mentioned in the episode, I'd love to hear from you. So please take a minute to email me at dave@supersimple.com. And don't forget to check out the Podcast Marketing Facebook group. I'll make sure I add a link to it in the show notes page, and you can also search for it on Facebook under Groups by just typing in Podcast Marketing. This episode of Remarkable is sponsored by Bethesda Roasting Company, a North Carolina-based small-batch gourmet coffee roaster that prides itself on offering only the highest quality single-origin coffee from around the world, perfectly roasted to present the best flavors of each varietal. In addition to using only quality beans, all coffees are roasted within 72 hours of being shipped. And as a coffee snob with 9 different ways to make coffee at home, I can tell you that if you've never had coffee brewed within 72 hours, you do not know what you're missing. Fresh coffee is night and day from anything you've ever purchased in a grocery store. So head on over to BethesdaCoffee.com to check out their monthly subscription plan so you can get it fresh to your door. You can use code SUPERSIMPLE50 at checkout to save 50% on your first purchase of either their Explorer or Adventurer subscriptions. That's BethesdaCoffee.com, and I promise you will not be disappointed. Our theme music was composed by Julio Gonzalez at Zymer. Zymer, or Remix, spelled backwards, offers sound design and audio post-production for podcasts, video, audiobooks, game, apps, and radio. In addition to my theme music, I've also been using Zymer for some of my post-production work, and I've been extremely pleased with the result. You can learn more about them or contact them today at zymer.co, that's Ximer.co, and tell Julio you heard about Zymer on the Remarkable podcast, and you can save 50% on any of their services. And if you would like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course designed to help you grow your audience and reach more listeners, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. That's it. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Remarkable.